Today's Stripe Show podcast is brought to you by About Golf Simulators.
All right, so welcome in to my studio here, special one here today, Stripe Show podcast. It's an Instruction Wednesday. That's the day we're going to be airing this. And joining me, one of the all-time greats in our industry, David Ledbetter.
Thank you, Travis.
Thank you, sir, for being here. This is cool. It's a dream come true for me to A, have a studio like this, being a teacher, you know, full-time for the last 23 years. When I was getting into the business, there were a couple names that were doing it full-time. Like, teaching was just kind of a part-time gig for an assistant pro. But there were a couple guys that were doing it full-time. Butch Harmon was one of them. Jim McLean was another, and of course, yourself was doing it full time. How long you been doing this? And thank you for being here.
I'm going to really date myself here. So I turned pro when I was 18.
Wow.
Okay, so I sort of went to college, I think for about 3 months, I think, and figured I wasn't going to cut it. So anyway, you know, accountancy wasn't for me. So anyway, I got a job. I was born in England, but I grew up in Africa, so I spent a lot of time in Southern Africa, Rhodesia, or Zimbabwe as it is now. So I went sort of the British route, where something like an Ian Poulter, mm-hmm. you become an assistant. I was a 2 handicap when I turned pro and worked on my game, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, so I was pretty much teaching from a young age. So I suppose over 50 years now I've taught, you know, so not quite going back to Hickory, but we're sort of, you know, going back in that direction.
Nick Faldo, Ernie Els, Michelle Wee. I mean, those are just the
Nick Price. I mean, look, I've had the good fortune to work with. You know, it's like a jockey, right? If they've got a good horse, it makes the jockey look really good too. Yeah. So I've had some really good horses. You know, Sari Park.
I worked with
her for a few years, mm-hmm. and so it's been a fun ride. You know, but I mean, yeah. I think, as you do, as I think all teachers do, you get a kick out of helping people, no matter what their level of play is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fun helping tour players, and these guys now, I mean, you look at it, they have a whole entourage, really. You know, mm-hmm. you've got a swing coach, you've got a short game coach, you've got a putting coach, yeah. you've got a sports psychologist, you've got a workout guy, nutritionist, you know.
It's very specialized.
Shortly it'll be, you know, you'll have somebody for your grip and somebody for the backswing, somebody for the downswing, you know, they'll have 3 coaches for.
You know what's funny is on the podcast like 4 months ago, I was talking to a putting coach, and he told me that, he goes, it is becoming so specialized, there will be a specialist on reading Bermuda greens versus bent grass greens. I was like, what? You've got to be kidding me. Mm. You know, someone who understands the Bermuda versus understands bent. Now, I don't know if I completely buy it, but I can tell you he's a very accomplished putting coach, and he was like, oh, yeah, I think that's probably where we're going. The specialization of the sport is.
I wonder what, growing up in Southern Africa, there was probably one of the greatest putters in the history of the game was Bobby Locke.
Yep.
So, you know, and, you know, he had an old Calamity Jane putter, which if you went to the toilet, he'd stick it under his arm. You know, you didn't want to be, there's no way that was going to get out of his sight. And you just wonder, you know, when you have a great putter like that on, some of those greens that they used to have in the old days, I mean, you know, the greens there are like the fringes today, right? Mm-hmm. So you just wonder what they would think about it, you know? So, I mean, hey, technology is great. And yeah, if you can get that little edge, I mean, that's what it's all about with the amount of money in the game now.
It is, yep.
So, you know, hey, whatever floats your boat, so to speak.
So I was out at Furyk and Friends over the weekend, and I'm walking up the fairway, and I'm looking at Ernie Els standing there, and he's going like this. He's going, you know, he's taking it to there and there, and I'm like, that's funny, you know, watching Ernie Els.
I just spoke to him last week and told him he's got to work on his takeaway.
One of the all-time greats, and I was like, I think we're going to talk about kind of what's going on there a little bit with this device, which I want to get to. This is your new tool called the Straightaway. And, you know, I followed your career and how you've taught for many, many years. And the one thing that I've always liked is you spend time on the backswing, which seems simple to most. If I say that on the podcast or I say it to a student, that the backswing has value. They're like, well, of course it does, right? But in our industry, like a lot of teachers and a lot of pushback that I will get is, well, the only thing that matters, Travis, is impact. So you're just wasting your time, you know, focusing in on the backswing. And I strongly disagree with that. And I know you do too, and we've talked about it. And so when you came out with this tool, straight away, I was like, that's cool. That's clever, because it's really gonna help manage the relationship between my hands and my body and how they're working, which is only one end of the club. And then secondly, the relationship between the club head and the hands.
Right.
And so there's two separate kind of components there. And by the way, the club face angle could be a third. And so tell my audience, who's all gonna get one here today, and everyone in this audience, and I know them very well, this tool is gonna help some of this stuff that I know plagues a few of them. Yeah. So talk about it before we demonstrate why this was.
You know, it's always been a big feature in my coaching that if you look at all the players, maybe I can just demonstrate it there. But if you look at all the players, what you see is where the hands appear in and the club head appears out, and it's so noticeable today how many of the pros incorporated into their waggle. I mean, you never used to see that type of movement. The only, interesting enough, the guy that used to do it, and I told him he should have patented it at the time, was Mike Weir. If you remember Mike Weir, he would sort of work on it, you'd have a look at it. Now, you're getting a lot of players now. I think probably 90% of the LPGA players do it, and a lot of players do it on the regular tour now. Sam Burns, Justin Thomas, there's a lot of players that actually... Ludvig Åberg, this new young Swedish star, makes it. So it's like a rehearsal to start with. So the start, you know, let me ask you this. What's the most important move in the swing? Would you say? Anybody out there?
The takeaway.
Huh? Oh, well, you just, he's been listening, isn't he? At least you know you're not asleep.
Good student right there.
Yeah, you know, Arnold Palmer said it. He said, you know, the most important move in the swing is the first 2 feet. Because if you get that wrong, everything else is now we're not saying that, obviously, if you're really a great athlete and you're, I mean, the only guy that I see these days, who's a bit of an outlier anyway, in many respects, who doesn't do this is John Daly, who rolls the club that way. Mm-hmm. But virtually everybody else, to a greater or lesser extent, has the hands in and the club head out. Now, what we've really figured out with most golfers is that probably 90% of swing problems that you see later in the swing are caused what's happening early in the swing. It makes sense, right? I mean, if you're out, as Travis was saying, I mean, if you haven't got the right relationship between the head and your body, or your hands and the club head, and the face is moving all over the place, I mean, there has to be some sort of compensation later on. So there's no point working on something downstream when what's going wrong is upstream, so to speak. So it, you know, I agree with you 100%. You know, the backswing prepares you for the downswing. And to me, yes, there's lots of different looking backswings, but the swings that really work is sort of a synchronized position. What we see with so many golfers, and one of the most typical things, is that, you know, they take the club back. I actually dislike the term takeaway, because it actually infers that you're taking the club back, where in reality, takeaway in the UK is like a, you know, they have Mexican restaurants here, they have Indian restaurants over there. So if you go there to take your meal home, all right, like a takeout, as they would say in America, they call it takeaway. So that's, you know, that's what I know about a takeaway. But I've had to change my tune, because takeaway is such common vernacular now that you've got to use it. So to me, the takeaway essentially gets you into a great position. We were talking earlier this morning. I mean, if, you know, one of the straightest hitters in the history of the game was Mo Norman, right? And if you look at swings that he made, literally, the ball's here. He literally start off anywhere up to 2 feet behind the ball. I mean, they asked him, because he always repeated everything twice. He said, "Why do you start there, Mo?" He said, "Don't worry about the takeaway. Don't worry about the takeaway." So he starts in that position, and then from there, that's where he makes his movement. Mm-hmm. So it's only tradition that tells us we have to start here, right? I mean, Yeah, in baseball, I mean, you don't start in front of you here, right? You start here, so you've only got a 6-inch backswing to worry about. So that makes the task that much easier. So I've always taught it. To me, I would say that the majority of amateur golfers, and even some of the pros, you talk about Ernie, I think have a flaw in the way that they move the club away. And then it affects the timing of the swing. Let me explain that. Okay, so if I'm going to walk to you, say this is my address position and you're the top of the backswing position, okay? We're just hypothetically talking here. So if I walk like this to you, okay, that's the most direct route, right? Now, I can get there by sort of going a roundabout way, and you know, if you actually film me, I should say, I'd be in the same spot. But the thing is, it's like a 400-meter runner sort of changing lanes and then figure, oh, I'm in the wrong lane, I better get back again. Not that would happen, but you can see the point. The fact is, you could be running 410 meters. So in actual fact, it really messes up the timing of your swing if the club is actually traveling further than it needs. And I would say, in my opinion, somebody like a Rory McIlroy, when he has issues, the club sort of works away from him, and then the club gets behind him here, and they say, oh, you've got to get the club in front of you, you've got to get the club in front of you. But especially with short irons, I mean, he can hit some really strange-looking short irons at times. And, I mean, I think he's the most talented player out there, to my mind. I mean, his rhythm is beautiful. But he does get out of he gets out of position at times. And to me, it's a timing element, because the swing really consists of your setup, the way your body moves, and the way the club swings. And those last two, you really got to time those two together. That's what constitutes a golf swing. So a lot of things you see in a swing, generally speaking, could be compensations for what's happened early. That's why that start, to me, is absolutely vital. And we've had this out, how long, Karen, about four?
Mid-June,
yeah. And it's been received really, really well. And what it's done for players, it's actually improved the timing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if somebody's going in here and going there, you're not going to eliminate that in one swing. I mean, you know, the straightaway is good, but not that good. So, but the thing is, it improves the timing whereby the club and the body sort of get in the right position at the right time. And impact, to me, is just an effect of what's gone before. It's not, you can't just say, all right, well, pose here and I'll get back into that position. Well, I mean, if the club's doing all sorts of things and your body's here, how do you get back to that? I mean, it's impossible. So I'm excited about it because, as I say, it helps every level of player, and I'm excited to show you how it works. It's pretty simple, and it doesn't force you into positions. It just makes you aware. So what it does indirectly, it educates the golfer how you should start your swing. And from there, it's much less complicated. I've had quite a few sports psychologists compliment me on the fact that it's getting people to think less, which is, to me, is key.
Before we bring someone up, take your setup there just real quick, David, and just take it back again. Act like you're going to hit it this way towards the sound.
Okay.
Yeah. And that inside takeaway that he was talking about, you know, if one of your buddies is doing that right there, I mean, you're probably going to do him some good to kind of show him
get
that
the
right
club
there.
In front. Yeah,
you
exactly.
Know, and get the club head in front. And that doesn't mean, to his point, go ahead, David's point, that your hands are then going to go out there.
Right. That's what happens. You see, people misinterpret things. Say, hey, you know, you're going way inside. Take it straighter back. So they go, whoop.
Yep.
Because we've actually identified 8 different bad takeaways that most amateurs have.
Okay. That's it?
Yeah, 8.
Hey, okay.
I'll go through it very quickly. And with slight variations, okay? But the good news is there's only one fix. So it's like, you know, and I'm not standing here trying to tout a method how to swing the club. But I think most coaches, most teachers will agree on how the swing should start. So once you're in this position, you know, if a teacher or a player themselves wants to have one plane, two planes, wants it flat, wants it upright, wants it bowed, wants it neutral, wants it long, wants it short, wants it laid off, wants it, you know, whatever the case may be, as long as you've got a good start, that just makes that job that much easier. And we'll probably get somebody up here just to check their takeaway. All right, so here we go. So this is the most common one, right? That one where they just roll it inside, okay? They take it back, take it, and you know, it's interesting, I mean, especially when you see a lot of slicers, you take it here and then they lift it and then they come over the top and it's like, okay, well, swing more from the inside. You've got to swing more in to out. Well, you know, unfortunately the horse is already bolted at that point. All right, so that's number one. Number two is where somebody just sort of takes it out, right? Just takes it out, and then they're so far on their toes, and then from here, they actually keep going, all right? So it's like, it's a sort of a pickup sort of look. Then you get the genuine pickup, where, and you see a lot of seniors, a lot of ladies who might not have the strength, you know, clubs are quite heavy, relatively speaking, once they get moving. So they just pick the club straight up off the ground. The elbows bend and the clubs come straight off the ground, right? Then you've got the player that actually opens the face going back, okay? It obviously, you'll probably get inside. I mean, sometimes you see that. Then you get some players who close the face going away. A lot of times that would separate here. And a lot of times too, when somebody goes outside, although they've delayed the obvious, it then sort of then gets around them. And then you get the player that actually, a couple more, I think that's six. You see a player that, okay, got to turn. So what do? They turn. They turn the hips, they turn the shoulders, and the club sort of starts to whip in behind them. And then we actually see somebody who looks quite good, pretty good. And the underlying thing here, which what you see with many players, and Travis referenced Ernie a little while ago, having worked with him for such a long period of time. One of the things we always sort of try to get through to him is that you want to start your swing with your belly button, okay? That it sort of gets some core involvement. Because, you know, the golf club only weighs a pound, okay? So it's very easy to manipulate it. I actually think that, you know, people had a sledgehammer there. Matt, you could probably use it with your build.
Hack Motion is an innovative wrist analysis sensor and app that measures players' wrist and hand movement in the golf swing. With audio feedback and different drill modes, it offers the capability to improve players' wrist mechanics in the golf swing to provide a better club face control and impact position. Hack Motion can be used for both full swing and putting to cover all golf shots. Hack Motion is used by some of the top golf coaches today around the world. Visit HackMotion.com.
The heaviness of it, it actually makes you move. You see, now, watch here. Let's take this little medicine ball here. Now, this weighs, 3 kilos nearly. But because of the weight of it, you can see as I make my movement here, it's as if this is actually moving. You can see that. So watch my core. See, I'm not actually trying to move my arms. I'm actually just trying to move my core. So when I move my core, you can see this movement, the takeaway, and it's a very short movement, by the way. It's not like you've got to, you know, you obviously hear a lot about extension, get extended, you know. So what does that connotate? Well, your hands and arms are moving independently. As I do this, to say it's a pretty short movement. And you can see it's almost like, which is replicated almost this side. So you've got this little nice, it's almost, this is like a left-hander's version, right? So as you make, which by the way, this, you know, this straightaway works for both people, both types of players, right or left-handed. And so that movement and is so important to sort of get the club moving. And that's to me where you incorporate a little bit of body and you can see, look, I can move my belly button here, so which is my core, which is almost moving sort of like this. Do my hips move? Yeah, they'll move a little bit, but I'm not actually thinking, okay, you know, one of Greg Norman's big thoughts over the years, well, okay, get your right hip pocket turned behind you. Well, now, that's okay, but if you just get your right hip pocket straight away, moving straight away, you can see what the club is doing. So it's really interesting how, now the start, if people can actually understand, it doesn't take a whole lot of emphasis here. It's pretty simple. There's a couple of simple steps you just follow. Before you know it, you know, you can develop this right movement. And say this, and we'll get into the straightaway in a minute, it's like it clips on. And let me tell you a little funny story very quickly, how I developed this, okay? Because you would have thought, well, why'd you take, you know, you've been teaching 50 years away, why'd you take so long to bring the bloody thing out? Well, that's a good question. Because what I used to do a lot, like with Ernie, we used to use just using him as an example. Because Ernie had one of those, when you look at that sort of rhythm, you know, it covers up a lot of minor ills, shall we say, in a swing. So, I mean, his swing is not technically perfect. I mean, even, you know, Adam Scott's is not technically perfect. I mean, whose is technically perfect? Anyway, it depends on who's looking at it, right? But we used to have a water bottle here, something like this, and just got Ernie to sort of move that away, because what it did, it got his core moving, all right? So we actually used a water bottle, or we used a little piece of 2x4 that we put behind it. And I've just sent him one of these, actually. I said, you know, this is really good, because, you know, to maintain the start of your swing and knowing that you're doing it right, that is so important, because there's a lot of training aids out, and there's some very good ones out for sure. A lot of them force you into certain positions. This one guides you. That's the difference. It guides you, and you start to understand exactly what takes place. So I was fiddling around, and I had my finger off the grip like this. And you can see how it matches the yellow arrow there, okay, which is basically at 45 degrees to the shaft. And as I swung it away, I mean, I wasn't really even focusing on trying to do anything in particular. As I moved it away, I thought, well, that's interesting. Look at my finger points. Because, like, see, I always talk about getting the club to 8 o'clock. If this is 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. And so I've changed my tune a little bit there now, because actually, you're actually getting the arrow, and people can relate to that because it's a straight line, at 9 o'clock. You see where that, does that make sense? So 6 o'clock here, 7, 8, 9. So as I move it away here, and you can see, so my finger actually was the originator of the straightaway. You know, we had
everyone see that where that arrow was, that how it was parallel? Yeah.
And you can see, and say we've got just, you know, a couple of little things which we'll show you. And it's really, you know, I say it's actually surprised me how well it's being received, because I know this is such a problem for so many golfers. Okay. Tension comes in there. You know, I hate to see that sort of waggle now. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the old days, I mean, everybody was doing it. I mean, including the great Ben Hogan. So, but I think he knew what he was doing. But the thing is, it's as if I suggest to people, number one, they get to the takeaway, and look where the takeaway is too, by the way. You don't really want the butt of the club going past your right hip pocket. That's the takeaway. You can see, so essentially the hands might move up to a foot, depending on the club and the width of my stance, but up to a foot, and the head moves about up to 36 inches. It's like a 3-to-1 ratio, almost. You know, that's just a general observation. So it's not like you're trying to really extend and separate the arms. So the big key really, you stop me whenever, because, you know, I'm like the ever-ready bunny here. So.
Well, real quick on the arrow. So act like you're going to hit it that way again.
Yeah, okay.
Because that arrow is key for...
Yeah, it is. So, well, let me.
There's a lot of guilty people in this audience that
let's take do this, that yeah. club. Let's do this. Yeah,
just not to make an eye contact with any of them that.
Okay, so here
Rick
we go.
Friedman.
All right. So we've got a couple of what I call aim sticks now, just to.
So this is a good way to. This is where I was going to take you. This is good right here.
Right.
This is a great way to practice at home, right?
So
here.
This, if we're going at that target there, I'm going to line that up there. This is my. This is how you get this right. You get a couple of alignment sticks. You can use golf clubs. You don't have to use an alignment stick or an aim stick, as we like to call it. So you then get this one, which is on your toe line, parallel to the target line. That's essentially what you're doing. Then you can sort of move that out of the way. These are pretty cool. They've got little holes in them. I always figured out, because you know how often you put an alignment stick down, you kick it, and the next thing is it's aiming 30 yards to the right. So
you want that parallel?
Anyway, yeah, so we'll leave that one over there. But essentially, you can see, Karen, you want to come and give us a hand here? My associate, Karen Pinniger here, who's been through most of this with me. But so just watch as I make my movement here, Travis. I'm going to move it back, and you can see this yellow line here, okay, is parallel to the aim stick on the ground. You can see. So what actually happens is that the head moves slightly inside the target line. Mm-hmm. When I look down at this, it's parallel and to the inside of this. That's the whole key. So getting that first movement. In fact, if I turn and face the club, I'm in exactly the same position as I was at address. So the takeaway is a very simple movement. It's just getting the club moving, getting it moving in sync, say, with the body. And then from there, the swing really, in my opinion, starts from here. Okay, so once you're there, you can set the club, you can, you know, whatever the case may be. And the thing is, you can tailor it too. Coaches can tailor this if they want, you know, say somebody, hey, they get the start right and they still have this. Okay, no, get the red arrow looking more out in front of you.
What I like too is your hand, do that again. Take it back there, your hands stay in. right? So you don't go out there.
No.
So you can see how that gets outside the toe line.
Yeah, you see, yeah, exactly.
That's code shank, you know, that's what happens. So you get your hands, keep right. your hands in like that.
Yeah, and a lot of times what you'll see, I mean, look, if I do it wrong,
yeah.
you can see where it points. And if I really exaggerate this movement, you see, look, it's pointing over there. It's very important to get this parallel, actually slightly on the inside of the target mm-hmm. line. So okay. it just gives you a really good visual to a point
inside
where
the toe. Okay.
you know, you can rehearse it. And the one thing we like players to do is to actually get to here, mm-hmm. stop, check it, and then actually complete the backswing and then actually hit it. So it's actually a great drill to actually rehearse making sure you get in the right movement. And the beautiful thing with it is that what you normally see in the long game, you see it bleeds into the short game. So somebody who's doing this, if they have a little pitch shot, in all probability, they're going to be doing the same thing. Yeah. And then that's where some real problems happen, because you really, because of the shortness of the whole motion, you don't have time to recover. To some extent, you know, you can somehow recover and still hit the ball, you know, reasonably well.
Let me ask you this. To do that again. Mm. Would you say over the last 20 years, like Ernie Els, Nick Price, Faldo, that generation of players versus now Victor Hovland, Morikawa, that today's generation keeps that face looking down more?
Yes,
and
exactly.
where you look at Ernie, he's rotating the face more.
Yeah, exactly. That's one thing he's always liked to do. Whenever yeah. I ever try to get him to get the face a little bit more this way, he didn't like it.
Yeah.
I mean, because remember, for years, right, everybody was talking about, well, when the club's parallel to the ground, make sure the toe's straight up in the air, right?
Yeah.
Which has
yeah.
changed quite a bit.
Quite a bit, yeah.
yeah.
So it's definitely gotten more toe down.
Yeah, which yeah. is, I actually prefer, too, because to yeah. me, that's a more natural movement. If you are actually opening it, and that's one of the reasons why Ernie actually separates, because he doesn't want to shut the face, so he sort of opens mm-hmm. it. So, you know, there's always trade-offs in this game, you know, but it's a very simple way. And you can see just another way of describing this here. Okay, so here we go. See, so you watch as I take it back here, all right, as I make my movement. See, the club is going inside, but look where my hands are. Mm-hmm. Relative to the club head. You see how they're always inside. And that was one of the things, you know, I wrote a controversial book 3 or 4 years ago called The Ace Swing, okay? And it was controversial because it was different. And it was fine, but because I've always felt that a lot of players would benefit from having, you know, if you took one of my favorite swingers from around here was Calvin Pete. Okay, now, one of the straightest hitters in the history of the game. I mean, Mo Norman was straight, but he didn't really play the U.S. Tour to any great extent. But Calvin Pete, I mean, I think for the first 7 years when they had statistics available, how many greens and fairways hit and so on, you know, he led all the statistics for virtually mm-hmm. the first 6 years, I think. So he had a very unusual swing. He had a sort of broken left arm mm-hmm. here, and the club stayed in front of him the whole way. But then from here, as he changed direction, yeah. I mean, somewhat similar to maybe a little bit like a Jim Furyk, okay? So for a lot of players, I mean, this is way more preferable to get the club up. I'm not saying lift your arms to do it, but having the club more up than having the club around here.
Yeah.
Because would you agree?
Oh, yeah, that was 100%. I
mean, so
and that's kind of the benefit where he's taking it now when you get it started. You know, when you do hinge it, the shaft gets set to where then the shaft can shallow a little bit in transition.
Exactly. Because, I mean, look, if you look at it, virtually every player, you know, there's always outliers, but virtually every player will get that club halfway down parallel to the original mm-hmm. angle of the shaft. Okay, I mean, what do we see with handicap players that are like this? Now, you do see the odd tour player who gets this way, and then they'll compensate and somehow, so their body motion, they lose a little bit of what the body motion should be probably looking like, but it's all an effect. They know they've got to get the club shallower, so they find a way to do it. Most golfers, you know, they just keep going. That's why they swipe across it. Yeah. So it's really interesting. And the interesting thing here, okay, so this is a little training we have called a boomerang. It's actually the reason why it's called a boomerang, not that it literally comes back to you, but it does if if the cup falls out, you just pick it up and put it under your arm again. So very simple.
That would be something. If it came back to you.
That's right. There we go. But the thing is, I like the feeling of the belly button and also keeping the left arm pretty connected or linked to your chest, because any separation here, As I say, if you look, essentially, you watch Rory sometimes in slow motion, how the hands sort of go out and, you know, drop back in.
Yeah.
But as accomplished as he is, he can certainly obviously offset that. But to me, once you're here, it's like, for a lot of people, they say, is that where the club head should be? Surely that's, you know, that's, no, it's going inside too much. Surely I want to be straighter back. No, it's, I mean, the swing is not a straight line. We're working, you know, like a hula hoop, like a, in a circular fashion, right? So it's got to, I mean, it might appear to go straight back for the first few inches, but then, no, it should be going inside. And the fact is, just think of it this way. You've got a little circle that the hands swing on and a big circle that the club head swings on, and that little circle is sort of staying inside the big circle to start with. So in actual fact, this appears to be coming in. I've always talked about a lot of players trying to feel almost the butt of the club hitting themselves on the right leg here. And, you know, that feeling, even exaggeratedly so, but where the club head is outside the hands. So from there, you can set the club and essentially, the great thing about it is that once you're here, you can almost let your body take over. You can actually complete the pivot motion here, start to move into it, start to rotate. So you're actually, you're putting more emphasis on the bigger muscles actually working the smaller muscles. And so, you know, when people do everything with their hands and their arms, that's where all the inconsistency lies.
I would say, and I see a lot of new students, 75% of the time I'm getting them organized going back. And then from there, you know, then it's like, okay, now let's go find it. And then if they need help with that, then we start working on that.
Right.
But it's amazing how things clean up, you know, when you get the backswing. I'll tell you a quick story about Calvin. When I very first moved to Florida, I worked with Calvin for 5 years and spent a lot of time with him. Just a gem of a guy. And we did a lot of golf schools together. He liked working with me and I liked working with him. Do you remember Calvin, Blake, when I was working with him at the World Golf Village?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Yeah. And Rick, you might have been down there too. Yeah. And so... we would do schools together, and he would, you know, he would do a lot of the short game stuff and the driving. He could hit it. He could point there and hit it there. I mean, it was insane. And so we would come time to do bunkers, and I would say, Calvin, you want to do bunkers today? And he's like, no. I'm not. Every time he didn't want to do bunkers. So I would have to get in, talk about the bunker technique. And finally at lunch, I asked him one. I mean, this was like 20 times. He would never do bunkers. And I said, Calvin, I said, why don't you ever want to teach greenside bunkers? He says, Travis says, I'm a terrible bunker player. Terrible. I'm like, come on. I mean, you've won 12 times on the PGA Tour. I've watched you hit countless balls.
Well, you never went in them very often.
That's exactly what he said. We're eating lunch, and he looked at me. He says, Travis, he says, I never went in them. And just kept eating his lunch. Didn't laugh, nothing. I said, fair enough. I'm doing bunkers from here on out.
Yeah, well, that shows a point. You know, I mean, when we talk about bunker play, I mean, it's a completely different animal to your regular swing. I mean, you know, I mean, many points. First and foremost, you're not actually trying to hit the ball, right? You're trying to hit a point behind the ball.
Yeah.
And if you look at all the great bunker players, I mean, you know, they've got the face opening up. It's like, you know, like this, so they can release, you know, you're actually trying to get the club head to pass your hands there. You know, you're not trying to get any lag and so on. So for somebody who was so much this way, I mean, I remember when I looked at Dustin Johnson for the first time, I wondered how he played bunker shots, because obviously a very shut look here. And the interesting thing was that he actually had the face wide open like this.
Yeah.
So that offset the fact that he actually, you know, took the club back the way he did. So it's interesting. I mean, look, I mean, God didn't give everybody everything, right? So
Calvin said he hit one ball out of bounds in his entire career. And he said the only reason he hit it out of bounds because his caddy gave him the wrong line off the tee. It was a blind tee shot. And so he blamed it on his caddy.
Yeah,
he said, hit it there, and I did. We walked out. It was 2 feet out of bounds. He gave me the wrong line.
I mean, very, very unique. But I say for a lot of players, to me, he's one of my all-time sort of consistent ball strikers that has ever played the game.
Amazing.
I mean,
just,
you can't have those statistics. And I mean, he wasn't long.
No.
I mean, he had a pretty weak grip and so on. But I mean... I mean, when he came, I mean, through impact, I mean, talk about having a perfect impact position. Wow.
Yeah, in the era of, and I'll just, my 2 cents here on this, and then we'll get Terry up here is, you know, Calvin was, as David was saying, he kind of aired out there. But then he had this beautiful move of the club just kind of lay down on the way down, and he just, in the era of rotation, you know, getting people open at impact, I mean, Calvin could just open up so good.
Yeah, he had his right foot off the ground a lot.
We used to take pictures, and I'd show it to him, and he'd be like,
I remember.
He's just like, yeah, this is kind of what I do. Like,
I remember watching one of his instruction videos, because I honestly don't believe he knew what he did.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. That was my point. Like, he
just hit balls.
Is that good? I'm like,
and he started when he was, what, 23 or something? 22 or something?
Yeah, started late in Detroit.
And he's one of nine children. Yeah. And, but I remember watching a video, you can go on YouTube and see it, and he's wearing, I think, a green shirt and black pants, if I remember. And all he does for about 15 minutes is talk about ball position. Okay, yeah, ball position is really important. You know, I've got to watch my ball position. And it's like, okay, is there anything else? Well, ball position is so important. If you can get your ball, so obviously he's one of those unique players that sort of, and you get players like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, the less they know, the better, you know? I mean, I don't think Dustin Johnson knows a whole lot about his swing, to be quite honest with you. I mean, he has that, you know, he has TrackMan out there, nice little orange box there, but I don't think there's any workings in it. I think it's just an empty shell.
Yeah.
And so, he actually does it, I think, more for yardages than anything else.
He just looks at the carry, it's all.
Yeah, that's what he does. So, and, you know, when players are like that, I mean, you go back in the day, a similar player, you know, going back an era or so, was like Sandy Lyle. He had absolutely no clue about his swing. Zero. Yep. Zero. You know, it was like, and, you know, I mean, he was, they called him Simple Sandy, but which is for golf, I think, a lot of times is great. You know, you either want to be really stupid or, you know, we wasn't stupid, but I mean, as far as, I mean, I always remember when he won the World Match Play, which is sponsored by the Japanese liquor company, Suntory, and he stood up and said, I want to thank the Chinese for putting on this tournament, you know, so that didn't go down too well. But anyhow, but, you know, so, I mean, it takes all types. And there's lots of different swings, we know that, and lots of different builds. And to me, the key element in a swing that really works and repeats is how it synchronizes. I use the word synchronization a lot, trying to synchronize the arm swing with the body rotation.
Yep.
And how you do that, somebody like John Rahm, I mean, he's got a very weak grip. I mean, he stands open. His club does sort of work away from him, but the swing is so short and compact that he doesn't have chance. I mean, I would say you would never heard of John Rahm if, as a teacher, try to get him to do from when he was about 13 or 14, so his dad informed me, try to swing it longer. And because I think he would have been all out of sync completely. The fact that he's got this short, compact swing and just, you know, I mean, he's like a bull, isn't he, the way he moves. You know? So and the way he's built, I should say. So anyway, Karen, you want to come up here? And we'll, can I just get this?
Karen, I want to hit a couple of shots here.
Yep. You want this one or...?
Where's your club?
Okay.
You got yours. Okay. So I just want to go through it just very briefly. And then what I'm going to ask who's coming up here? Who's volunteering?
Terry.
You're being volunteered, Terry? It's amazing, honestly, that the changes that people make without sort of really thinking about the changes. Because if you need to simplify it. You know, one of the big problems that amateurs have, right? Or any golfer for that matter, even tour players at times, is they get paralysis through analysis. Okay, they're thinking so much about all the positions, all everything going on. But you can see here, so Karen was a very good college player, played on the Symetra Tour for a while, and we can see as she makes her move, Karen, just complete your backswing now and then go. I mean, you felt this has helped you from a simplification standpoint, right?
Absolutely, yes, it has.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just makes it really simple to take the club away and. As you said, it doesn't make you think very much. Because you just have to, it's kind of in your line of sight anyway, as you're taking the club back. And you can really check whether you're right, correct here.
Yeah.
And then I also like to focus on this little red arrow in my transition for that to not then go point behind me.
Right.
But for it actually to stay
in front of you.
In front of me.
Right.
As my club transitions.
Right.
And it does make it quite upright, if you will. But it just really kind of balances the club up, and all you have to do is rotate your shoulders and complete your backswing.
Yeah, I've always been a big believer of the club. There he is there now. There we go. But anyway, on getting the club a little steeper going back and a little shallower coming down, I just think it's a more natural. You know, if I grip the club with two fingers and a thumb and just swing it, you can see how the club gets up. And then as I make my movement forward, the club actually shallows. So it lies down, as we term it. Because I say the big issue that we see with so many golfers is the fact that, you know, this thing, I'll tell you a perfect example, actually, who's improved his swing over the years, because remember, the golf ball doesn't know how old you are. If your technique gets better, you can still play some really good golf. One of the players that's, you know, who I've known for a long time is Bernard Langer, who I think is just a marvel, the fact that he's playing the way he does at his age and the intensity that he puts into the game. And Bernhard used to, I remember watching him at Augusta one time. I was sitting with Hank Haney, he says, and we were talking about the fact that he needs to reverse his planes, because he used to get it flat going this way and then really steep coming here, but then he would jump up off it, and so he'd have this sort of compensation going. So he's actually reduced that tremendously over the years, and I'm sure that's helped him a lot as far as his longevity is concerned. All right, so can I just hit a couple? There we go. We just, okay. Right, just hit a couple starting from that takeaway spot. Then I mean, it's really simple, folks. Actually, before you go ahead there, Karen, sorry. So it clips on. It's got these two little bolts. Okay, you put RH up, RH standing for right-handed, and I'll just take it off and then put it back on again. So here it is. It's that little magic gadget, as we like to call it. So it slips on like so. All right, we'll get on in a second here. Okay, there we go. Slide it up. Keep it right beneath the grip. Okay, right beneath the grip here. You tighten these bolts here. And basically, it's secure. Don't have to sort of overdo the tightening of the bolts. It fits in there. It's got a little cushion sheath inside the shaft there, so it doesn't vibrate. And there she goes. That's all there is to it. So, right, go ahead. And the thing is, you can make practice swings with it. You can hit balls with it. Right, you want to hit one from there. Okay, let's do another one. So it's nice. You can rehearse it. You can, you can start from that position.
I like to always do a couple of waggles to just kind of visualize it.
And then the...
Has she ever played golf before?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so the other thing is that, which is just little drills where, Karen, okay, just, I want you to move it back, keep your eyes closed. There you go. And then, keeping your eyes closed, you start...
Hit the ball with your eyes closed.
No. You don't have to hit the ball. But it's just a way of being able to ascertain, okay, that what you're feeling and what you're doing are one and the same. Say, where is that now? And just by rehearsing this, I tell people, look, practice this 5 minutes, 3 or 4 times a week at home. You don't need to even go out and hit balls with it. But you get that start right, it's like that's so different. I mean, you know, Karen was definitely one of these players that sort of, got the club inside behind her hands very quickly, which is, pretty typical. Okay, right, now just rehearse that again once more. All right, now start from the normal position and go ahead and hit it. So it's really pretty simple. The fact is, if you actually got somebody just to do a little pivot drill, for instance, and say, you know, because this is how the swing should look and feel, you know, where you wind up into your right side, the weight's pressure's in the right heel, start to move forward there, and then you start to unwind. All of a sudden, if you learn to get your body moving in that fashion, and we suggest people do a little pivot drill here and there just to sort of get the feeling of what the body's doing, and then apply this movement, I won't say it's game over, but it makes this game a heck of a lot easier. All right, so I think we've had enough of you, Karen, thank you.